This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, September 20th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani made history yesterday with a monstrous game against the Miami Marlins. We'll talk about the memorabilia aspect in our next segment. But right now, the site of America's biggest nuclear disaster is now being readied for a rebirth. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Dan Gallagher, tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column based in San Francisco. Dan, thank you for joining us today. Now, 3 Mile Island is just one of those, it's an incident that took place in 1979. It was indeed a nuclear disaster. It, along with Chernobyl, had become shorthand for some of the danger that some people believe lurks around nuclear power. But the plant itself was decommissioned in 2019. It served for a long time after the 3 Mile Island disaster. And now it's getting a new life and it's powering new tech, Dan.
It is, and this is an interesting deal because this is essentially one company that's trying to bankroll its own energy needs, because Microsoft is one of the big tech companies at the forefront of this new generative artificial intelligence. The chips and components to power that consume a ton of electricity, and so they're looking to the future and thinking, you know, we're going to need to secure more power generation. And this was actually a pretty creative way for them to do it.
Now, is this potentially the wave of the future in terms of meeting the needs of artificial intelligence? I mean, first off, you talk about the electricity needs of AI. Just how much juice does AI require? And why does taking it off the public grid and just acquiring it yourself, why does that make sense?
Well, what's required really depends on the types of components you're deploying. But I'll give you just as one hint. Like, I was at NVIDIA's big conference 6 months ago in March when they were debuting their, you know, introducing the newest chips they've got that are going to be going on sale later this year. And the biggest conversation around that conference, if you walked around and talked to people, wasn't the capabilities of the chips themselves. It was the energy generation that would be required to power them. And, you know, people doing forecasts to say, look, if data centers got outfitted with all these, there's not actually enough electricity on the grid right now. And it takes years to get new energy on the grid. You know, you can't just throw up a power plant overnight or even in a year. So it's considered one of the major limitations going forward for this type of technology, is to get enough energy to power it.
And this plant has been mothballed since 2019. Constellation Energy, when it's up and running once again, will rename it the Crane Clean Energy Center. I mean, obviously, it takes a very long time to build a power plant, much less a nuclear power plant. I mean, the new plant that went online in Georgia earlier this year took many years and many billions of dollars to bring that to fruition. So when do they expect this thing to be up and running, renovated and under a new name?
It looks like they're targeting something like around 2028 to have this thing going. And this is only going to be, you know, this is going to solve one part of the problem for one company. Bill Gates of Microsoft, you know, the founder, is like a very loud proponent of nuclear power. And so I don't know if Microsoft or other big tech companies are going to kind of try to go this direction or try to secure other types of energy needs. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. This is a very interesting move by a major company that could be a precedent for others, but we'll have to see, because like you said, it's hard to get, it takes years to get a normal power plant, through the approval process and up, and then you add more to that for nuclear just because of its controversy.
Dan Gallagher, tech reporter for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column in San Francisco. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, trying to gauge the value of a new piece of baseball history.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Dodgers superstar Shohei Ohtani has become the founding member of baseball's 50-50 club, slugging 50 home runs and stealing 50 bases in one season. Let's discuss the ball that set the record and the memorabilia market with Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics in New York. Stephen, thank you for joining us today. Now, at last word, the person who caught that home run ball in Miami, there were some discussions with the Dodgers about turning it over to Ohtani to keep the ball himself, but the guy said, nope, I'm holding on to it. So what's the value of this ball today, one day after it was hit?
Well, this sort of drama very much happens every time there's some significant ball being hit into the stands. Some lucky fan gets it, and then the player who hit it wants it as a souvenir of his career. I think this is a little bit of an unusual ball in that the category it's now in, which is a 50th home run of a season, is not necessarily that noteworthy. But it created a new category called the 50-50 club, which is 50 home runs, 50 stolen bases in a single season. I am very unsure if this ball will stand the test of time. I'm not really sure that a 50-50 club is going to be that noteworthy in the future. Usually people focus on single home run season. 60 in a home in a season, 70 in a season. That's what in the past people have focused on. So I am not exactly buying word that this is a $1 million ball. I think it's certainly noteworthy. I think it certainly has a piece of history attached to it. And it's very common for the team to try to get back the ball. Problem you got is you got somebody who caught the ball. And if it's worth $50,000, well, let's say $100,000, he's not going to sort of give it back because the team is offered $3,000 or $4,000 worth of autograph trinkets taken out of the locker room. So I think it's probably in the owner's best interest to keep it rather than give it back.
You talk about $1 million baseballs. Aaron Judge's 62nd home run ball from a couple of years ago sold for $1.5 million at auction. Mark McGwire's 70th home run ball sold for $3 million. But then there was a big drop off when Albert Pujols hit number 700. That sold for just $360,000. So you're saying that this person who has the 50th home run ball that Ohtani hit yesterday, they may have visions of a $1 million payday, but they'll still get a princely sum, but not what they're imagining.
Oh, I think that it seemed like a lot of reporters created this $1 million figure. It's a very cool ball. It has a piece of history attached to it. But the $1 million, there's just no way. It's not going to happen. But I could certainly see the person keeping it. He may have been just a huge Dodgers fan and may have wanted it for that reason and didn't want to spend the next 30 years going, oh, yeah, I caught that ball. Oh, I gave it back the next day. And people like chiding him for the fact that he gave it back. So who knows what the person's motivation is, but I think he's probably smart to not take a ball that's worth $50,000 or $100,000 and trade it for an autographed ball, an autographed bat, a photograph. He's probably better off just keeping the ball.
And then very quickly, Stephen, I think one thing we've talked about before is that one element that really drives up the value of any sports collectible is the worldwide market interest in it. And baseball, less so compared to basketball, which really is a global sport. But with Ohtani, you have memorabilia that has value not only to American baseball fans, but also in his native Japan. And is that going to push up the price of Ohtani memorabilia going forward?
Oh, I absolutely think anytime you have a sports star with worldwide status, and in this particular case for absolutely good reason, there's a much greater market for him as a collectible sports star than, let's say, you know, an American player on the Dodgers or the Cardinals or the Yankees. He is an international star. Not every baseball player qualifies as an international star, but he does.
Stephen Fischler, CEO of ComicConnect.com and Metropolis Comics in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, dealing with the weight of medical and credit card debt.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's not only credit card debt that can be financially debilitating. Medical debt is also a huge problem for many people. Let's discuss the dangers with Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com, based in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And the story of medical debt is so potent, it really does impact politics. There have been numerous proposals afoot to make sure that medical debt is not counted against you on your credit report, because if you have to pay for a life-saving procedure, what are you going to do? You either pay for it or you shuffle off this mortal coil. That's the choice many people have to deal with. So, Ted, if you are dealing with medical debt, what are some things you can do to knock it down?
One tip would be to try to negotiate with the doctor or hospital. A lot of times they have payment plans, and they're willing to work with you on a low or no interest plan. It's a lot better than putting it on your credit card, because if you put it on your credit card, then it's not medical debt anymore. It's credit card debt, which is not treated as favorably by the credit bureaus, and it has really high interest rates. The average credit card charges over 20%. There are some cards that are specifically geared towards medical procedures, like the CARE credit card, that often have interest rates around 30%. Try to work something out with the doctor or hospital before going down that route.
And I think a lot of people, though, when they hear about either negotiating with the hospital or negotiating with the billing provider, it's kind of a you can't fight City Hall kind of thing, because maybe you're intimidated by the legal resources of the hospital, or you just don't want to spend hours and hours and hours on hold. And is it just simply a matter of being persistent?
I know it is confusing and time consuming. There are actually some services that for a fee will help you with this, you know, certain bill negotiators and patient advocates. I mean, that might make sense if it's an especially pricey situation. Some of this you can do on your own, and maybe it's not as bad as you fear. You know, it could involve looking through the statement, for example, and making sure that insurance paid what they were supposed to pay. You know, sometimes the bill doesn't even go to insurance, and that's a mistake. So you want to make sure that you get all the insurance benefits you're entitled to. Look for errors. You know, sometimes people are charged for treatments that they didn't receive or tests they didn't take. You know, sometimes you're double billed, or, you know, sometimes there's just kind of human error that factors into the process. It's important to take a look at that first.
Also, it's also important to keep every piece of documentation you get, because part of the confusion can be for some people is that you'll receive multiple explanations of benefits, and then you'll get the bill, and then you don't know what you're necessarily you're paying for. So when you get that explanation of benefits that says this is not a bill in the mail, hold on to that.
Yeah, exactly. And don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, maybe you could ask the billing person at the doctor's office or the hospital, or you could ask the insurance company, and just make sure that things are covered, because, you know, this can be really, really expensive, and you do want to be your own advocate here. I know there are a lot of errors. You know, when it comes to the credit bureaus, there have been some positive changes in recent years. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has been pushing for reform, saying that medical debt is not as predictive as other forms of debt. So paid collections have come off credit reports, as have collections, medical collections, less than a year old, and medical collections under $500. So you want to make sure that those are not appearing on your credit reports if they shouldn't be on there.
Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge. just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. It's Riot Fest weekend in Chicago at the usual place, a courthouse in Kentucky, the scene of a deadly shooting targeting a judge. Entrepreneur Friday using innovations in electronics to create a line of clever and useful products, and Nike is shaking things up in an effort to turn its business around. WBBM Business, the markets are mixed, the Dow is up 70 points, NASDAQ down 52, the S&P 500 down 8. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, sunshine, some clouds, very warm, rather humid, a thunderstorm around in northwest Indiana, and a high today of 89, 83 degrees right now in Chicago. It's 12:31, topping our news at the half hour. That's Beck, one of the headliners at Chicago's Riot Fest, opening today at Douglas Park on the west side. Other featured artists include Fall Out Boy, The Offspring, Slayer, and others. The music festival will include 5 stages, local food vendors, rides, and games. The festival will be open from 11:30 a.m. until 10 p.m. today through Sunday. A deadly shooting involves 2 of the highest-profile officials in 1 Kentucky county.
54-year-old District Judge Kevin Mullins was shot and killed in his chambers in the Letcher County Courthouse, allegedly by the county sheriff, 43-year-old Sean Steins, known as Mickey. Kentucky State Trooper Matt Gayhart.
Preliminary investigation indicated that Letcher County Sheriff Mickey Sean Steins fired at District Judge Kevin Mullins following an argument inside the courthouse.
The shooting stunned many of the 1,700 residents of Whitesburg, a close-knit Appalachian town in the hills of southeastern Kentucky. Jim Krasula, CBS News.
Hey, it's 12:32 as the Noon Business Hour continues. Markets are mixed right now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And this is a good time to check in on the Dow Theory, because even though the Dow Jones Industrial Average is posting some record numbers, the Dow Jones Transport Average is going in a different direction.
Well, certainly this year you've had the Dow Jones Industrial Average put on a pretty nice, you know, double-digit move. The Dow Jones Transportation Average, however, has been pretty much flat. The good news, though, Rob, is that yesterday, actually, even though the transports have been flat, they actually went to a 52-week high yesterday. So it shows you just kind of the sideways trading that the Dow transports have occurred. But yesterday's move was a positive under the Dow theory. Now the transports are selling off pretty sharply today because of weakness at FedEx and UPS. But while they haven't been outstanding, nor have they been poor in a sense of really, you know, portending a fall off in the economy, which they tend to show. So I'm reasonably optimistic that yesterday's move, we'll see some follow through on that, and that you'll see a move closer to the all-time high in the transports. They're only about 2% to 3% away from that.
And what explains the difference in trajectory between the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which has been on a rocket ride since January, and, as you point out, the relatively flat transportation average?
I think it's been a function of concerns about the Fed's ability to engineer kind of a soft landing. You may recall the transports tend to be an extremely economically sensitive index. So they're kind of meandering this year and reflecting kind of those back and forth concerns that people have in terms of the economy, whether we're going to be able to have a soft landing, whether it's going to be a hard one, whether a recession is coming. And I think that's what's impeded the transports. Now, hopefully, you know, I think the biggest bang for the buck in terms of the reduction in interest rates will go to economically sensitive areas such as the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which is another reason why I'm reasonably upbeat once we get past today that you'll see some improvement in the transports relative to the performance we've had year to date.
Now, it seems like just based on some of the data, and now that the blackout period is over, some of the Fed governors are speaking, and there was one number thrown out that the PCE might actually come in below 2% now, and that for all intents and purposes, the fight against inflation is over and the soft landing may have been achieved.
It's very possible it has. You know, again, the Fed, at least to me, it was a bit of a surprise move going to 50 basis points on the cut. And hopefully they went to 50 basis points, not because they feel the economy is suffering, but that they feel that there was room to do that given what's going on, the inflation story. And if that is the case, and the Fed is really more aggressively cutting rates because they're confident in inflation coming down, then that is bullish for stocks. So, you know, I think yesterday's move in the market was a reflection that investors are starting to think that is the reason why the Fed was fairly aggressive on that first rate cut, that the decline in inflation is giving them the room to be more aggressive and not worries about the overall economy.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter in Hammond, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Entrepreneur Friday, a suburban innovator developing a line of unique products for vehicles, the home, and the yard.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday, and this afternoon, the spotlight is on creativity and innovation. Welcome in Rock Smeja, principal of Limitless Innovations in McHenry. Rock, thank you for joining us today. This business was established in 2012, and before you started doing this professionally, were you always someone who was just developing gadgets in your spare time?
Hi, yeah, thanks so much for having me. Actually, we have a family business of innovation going back to the 70s, even before I was born, and yeah, I've been around it my whole life, and my father's an inventor, so when we came up with the idea of a product and early 2012, I just kind of jumped on the bandwagon and started, moving it forward.
And what was the first product that you guys came up with?
Yeah, our first product was called the Cable Hub in 2012, and it was just a very simple desktop cable organizer, so your cable wouldn't fall back when you're done charging your phone. And we had an interesting story on that one.
Hey, how did that come together? What was the source of inspiration for the Cable Hub?
Well, you know, it's just we wanted to just something cool in electronics and kind of, you know, branch out from the construction field that our family was in for so long. The family still has that business as well. And then I kind of took over this business and I was like, you know what, we can't sell it under the construction company. We have to start a new business. We started, and when it showed the product, people liked it, but no one really bought it. And we put probably a year or two of time and money and resources into it, and it was a good idea, but wasn't very successful. So after that, we took the same product. We put a circuit board in there and made it a universal charger. And actually, about a year or two after that, we just blew up successfully. We went to CES, won multiple awards, and just it kind of skyrocketed us from there.
Now, some of the other Limitless Innovations products include the Tiki Tunes portable Bluetooth wireless speaker, a Bluetooth speaker in a Tiki torch, Hello Birdie smart bird bath with app-based recognition. And so these are products that kind of run the gamut of categories and use cases. And what is it like, though, being an inventor? I mean, does a new idea just come to you like music? I mean, there's some people can tell jokes, some people can write a song, and you just come up with practical products that people can use?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say it's very hard. It's to be creative and then, you know, run the business and do everything we have to do day to day as an entrepreneur, as a business owner. You know, a lot of prayer, a lot of time thinking and trying to be creative. But yeah, our Hello Birdie is a smart bird feeder with an app and a solar panel. AI technology in there recognizes birds, hummingbirds, Tiki Tunes is a great Bluetooth speaker and a light. We have our multiple chargers and portable vehicle jump starters. We actually have a vehicle jump starter that's the size of your cell phone. You can plug in jumper cables to it. You actually jumpstart your car with something the size of your cell phone. We have air compressors that are similar. So many cool items that we're developing. We develop about 30 new products a year. So, yeah, it takes a lot of time into the nights, into the weekends. Thank God for family support and help. But, you know, just kind of keep moving forward and just kind of keep developing. And not every product's going to be successful, but a lot of them are, thank God.
we're talking to Rox Smedja, a principal of Limitless Innovations in McHenry, on this Entrepreneur Friday. And you mentioned when you developed the cable organizer that the first attempt wasn't successful. But once you added the charging cable or the charging capability to it, then it became successful. I mean, are there ideas that you think are just going to go off like gangbusters and then they don't until you either add another feature to it or make sure it's sold in the right place?
That's exactly right. I deal with that every day, I feel like. I just had a conversation with some major TV networks the other week, and you know, we talked about the right product at the right time at the right price. Of course, there are many other factors that go along with that too. There's so many, you know, everything has to align in some cases, but you know, we can't sell the bird feeder product probably in the winter, you know, especially in the Midwest. Certain Tiki speakers, that's more of a summer, maybe the gift item in Q4. So absolutely, there's so much strategy and time that has to go along with it. We've learned so much. We've come so far in 12 years, and you know, just like everyone says, you know, in entrepreneurship, they're still learning. You still have to learn. And, you know, we think we have it right once, and you just missed the mark with a certain time or a certain feature. We should have added that. We should have just, you know, considered that. And it's something that, you know, we take to heart every day.
Rox Smedja, principal of Limitless Innovations in McHenry, thank you for joining us today on this Entrepreneur Friday. And still to come, a major sports footwear and apparel maker is looking for a bounce back.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
There's a shakeup at the struggling athletic apparel giant Nike, including the abrupt retirement of its CEO amid declining sales. Welcome in Bob Phibb, CEO of the Retail Doctor in New York, the website RetailDoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And there was a time not too long ago, the idea of Nike wobbling in any respect seemed almost unthinkable. But it just goes to show you, it happens to the best of us if you're not at the top of your game all the time.
It's like that old saying, remember the people you step on as you go up the ladder because you're going to need them going back down. One of the biggest things that John Donahue did was he cut out a lot of their wholesale partners. Just said, we're not going to do business with them. We're all going to go to the stores. They're all going to be online. And that didn't work. So that was one of several things that he boldly made. But there were so many missteps that it's not a mystery that they brought back Elliott Hill, because he was, you know, a co-founder. And more importantly, he saw what was happening to the brand. And when they reported that sales would be down 10%, during its current quarter, that just sends shockwaves.
Was that decision to really do a lot of go online versus selling in stores, is that the real problem here, or are there other issues, especially other forms of competition? I mean, I think speaking as a 44-year-old, Bob, they talk about competition from Hoka, and I'll tell you one thing, Bob, that's a comfortable shoe, and it seems like is that eating into Nike's athletic, you know, footwear business.
So, you know, we were talking about Starbucks not that long ago, and you know, when they misstep and their sales go down, it's from people voting with their feet. They're like, the store's dirty, it's too hard to get my drink. In Nike's case, they spent so much time focusing everybody's attention to their own stores and website that they got rid of the idea of innovation, and they really failed to turn out different types of groundbreaking sneakers they were known for. You know, one of his things was he went back in the vault, pulled out some old styles, and then just kept coming out almost like every day with a different color. Well, that's not innovation. That's not what Nike was known for. So I think it's an exciting return. You know, also you look at their stock was down, I think, 25% this year at a time when, I don't know, I didn't hear the market was mixed right now, but, you know, yesterday was an all-time high. So they've attracted activist investors, which certainly have a say in it. But more importantly, you know, when the founder comes back, it seems to focus everybody back to it. And another exciting development I'm looking at, which we should talk at sometime, is how LL Flooring has been resurrected by its original founder, Tom Sullivan, because when the original person comes back in, you get that hustle back.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York, thank you for joining us today. You find him online at theretaildoc.com. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at wbbmnewsradio.com and the Odyssey app.